It's just about 9 o'clock straight up at 88.9 FM KUCI in Irvine. We're for this next hour programming. The opinions and views expressed are not necessarily those of KUCI, UC Irvine, and the University of California Board of Regents. This is new music from Laura Veers. This is a song called Fire Snake. We ease into today's edition of Talking Animals on 88.9 FM, KUCI in Irvine, and streaming live, of course, on the internet at KUCI.org. And a whole enterprise is broadcasting from the University of California at Irvine, home, of course, of the mighty, mighty Anteaters. I'm Duncan Strauss, and I'll be with you till 10 o'clock this morning with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. Right off the bat, I'd like to tell you that for the next hour, you can reach us directly by phone at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI, KUCI. And I absolutely urge you to use that number. Call us at any point in the show. Don't be shy. I'm telling you, we love, love, love to get called. You can also instant message us. We get the AOL Instant Messenger up and running, ready for action. The screen name, of course, is Talking Animals. Other ways to be in touch include emailing us at talkinganimals@AOL.com. And, of course, by way of our fabulous website, talkinganimals.net. Make no mistake, it's .net, folks, talkinganimals.net. Also, before I move on, I want to thank Serena Sharp for another rip-snorting, Hot Topic-laden rendition of the Serena Sharp Show. Meanwhile, here at Talking Animals, primarily we strive to learn about animals and animal issues from our guests, from news items, from your calls, from assorted other sources. But we're also here each week to celebrate animals through music, comedy, and other means. We aim for a spirited balance of those elements, as you can readily glean by visiting our nifty website. Again, talkinganimals.net, where just about every single show we've ever broadcast is archived. So from there, or visiting us before, listening to us before, perhaps, you'll know the heart of the program is the interview we conduct each week with some notable inhabitant of some province of the animal world, and we try to travel to all corners of that animal world for our guest. Today our guest is Roland Smith, co-author with his wife Marie of the new children's book Z is for Zookeeper, got ahead of myself, a zoo alphabet, a beautifully illustrated work that provides two levels of animal info in each page, one for toddlers in kind of the traditional children's book manner, and the other for much older kids and adults. And when it comes to the world of zoos, Roland knows whereof he writes. He spent more than two decades caring for exotic animals in such capacities as zookeeper, senior zookeeper, assistant zoo director, curator of mammals and birds, etc. He also played a pivotal role in the reintroduction of the red wolf, an animal that had otherwise become extinct in the wild, back into its native range of North Carolina, South Carolina, and Mississippi. So there'll be much to discuss when Roland Smith joins us in a few minutes here on Talking Animals. Meanwhile, it's time for our weekly look at items of interest in animal news. And I want to remind you of the phone number to join us on the show with your own comments and questions about animals. Not only this week's animal news, but any other animal topic you care to discuss. The phone number is 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. So turning now to interesting and or, that's the key phrase, is it not? Just double checking something real quick. Don't mind me. I'll be right back with you in a moment here. No, anyway, typically these are local, regional, national, sometimes international animal stories of note that seem important to spotlight, and with any luck, to get your comments on and discuss. We also try to include a few announcements of upcoming events or activities you may want to pencil in on your calendar. So, once again, having said all that, let's talk turkey, as it were. Produced, as always, by the Talking Animals award-winning Rip and Read News Department, let's jump in, shall we? And again, I don't see how we can start with anything other than the gator story. And really, as of the weekend, I guess the biggest news about the gator story is that there's no news. There's still no news. But let me just read a little bit about what I mean more specifically. Search for gator in Harvest City Lake suspended. The headline of this story from the LA Times. After a two-week search that has cost the city almost $50,000, the hunt for Reggie, the alligator, is on hold, at least for now. Park officials on Friday called off the search for the six-foot alligator that has caught the attention of scores of spectators and reporters who have flocked to Harbor City's Lake Machado to catch a glimpse of the elusive creature. Reggie's would-be captors from Florida's reptile theme park Gatorland packed up their gear about 5:30 p.m. and headed out of town. The lake remains fenced, however, and park personnel are posted there 24 hours a day. Quote, "We are considering this halftime," said Gatorland crew leader Tim Williams, 56, who has been handling alligators for 30 years. He's won the first half, he being, of course, Reggie. Williams' four-man crew has advised park officials to keep calling Reggie's name and to continue leaving him tortillas, chicken legs, and other items he likes in hopes that he will reemerge. He was last spotted at 10 p.m. Sunday. That is a week ago yesterday. Quote, "He's spooked. He knows something's up," Williams said. "He may never be seen again. It may be that he pops up after everybody gets back here, or you may not see him for 6 months to a year." Williams' crew spent the last week scouring the lake with fishing nets in an attempt to snare Reggie. He noted that there are plenty of frogs and crayfish for the big reptile to feed on, and there's space to swim. Quote, "If I were an alligator, this is a great place to live, a beautiful alligator habitat," he said. Hopefully he'll come back to the spot he was comfortable with. And the story goes on from there. And of course, there's also a story in today's paper sort of profiling Mr. Williams, who, you know, at some point apparently will be back, but returned meanwhile to Florida to attend to business. So the Reggie the Gator story continues. And of course, something else that happened while we were, you know, since our last edition of Talking Animals, they found the folks who dumped Reggie. I'll read a little bit of that to you quickly. The alligator remains on the lam, but the alleged alligator dumpers have been snared. Two San Pedro men, one a former Los Angeles police officer, were arrested Wednesday on suspicion of allegedly dumping an alligator into Lake Machado. For 2 weeks, the creature has eluded self-styled gator wranglers from Colorado and Florida. The gator's name is Reggie, and he grew too big for his backyard jungle. Authorities said an anonymous tip led detectives to the homes of the gator's alleged former owner, Anthony Brewer, 36, and Todd Natal, a 42-year-old ex-police officer. By sunrise, authorities said they had learned quite a bit more about the gator, heretofore known as Harbor Park Harry. For one thing, Brewer gave him to Nato after he had become too large and ornery to keep. Brewer claims to have had a fond likeness for the family, said LAPD Lieutenant Rick Angelo. However, the animal got a little too hard to handle. Nato had planned to keep Reggie, but he found himself overwhelmed by a reptile that had grown to about 6 feet long and 150 pounds, Angela said. So 2 months ago, Nato and Brewer allegedly released the alligator into the lake, he said. And, of course, they served seized a virtual mini-zoo when they went to the homes of both men. And that leads us into a familiar theme about people who keep exotic, wild, etc. animals in their homes. And the things that can go wrong. So we'll keep you posted on that. Next in the animal news is a story that Serena touched on towards the end of the Serena Sharp show. But I don't see how we could not touch on it here in Talking Animals. And by that, of course, I refer to the exhibit at the London Zoo. At the London Zoo, visitors can talk to the animals. Now some of them talk back, the story reads. Caged and barely clothed in a rocky enclosure, 8 British men and women were on display beginning Friday behind a sign reading, "Warning, humans in their natural environment." The inhabitants of the Human Zoo exhibition stunned themselves, perhaps they stunned themselves as well, but actually they stunned themselves on a rock ledge, wearing fig leaves into bathing suits. Some played with hula hoops, some waved. A sign informed visitors about the species, diet, habitat, worldwide distribution, and the threats to its survival. On Friday, visitors pointed and laughed, and several children asked why people were, quote, in there. A spokeswoman for the London Zoo, Polly Wills, said that was exactly the question the zoo wanted to answer. Quote, "Seeing people in a different environment among other animals," Ms. Wills said, "teaches members of the public that the human is just another primate. It also," she conceded, "lets them, quote, have a gawk at people." The exhibition, which will end Monday, as in today, puts the 3 male and 5 female Homo sapiens next to their primate relatives, separated by an electric fence. The 8 were chosen from 30 applicants who entered an online contest and make up a diverse group. One is Brandon Carr, 25, an actor who won his place by submitting a spot of anthropomorphic verse. I'm funky like a monkey and as cool as a cat. Talk more than a parrot, up all night like a bat. I'd like to remind you that was a winning entry, folks. Anyway, so that's, I think, all we need to say there, but I'd love to, if you have any thoughts or comments on the human exhibit at the London Zoo, 949-824-5824, 949-UCI, KUCI. And just wanted to at least acknowledge, for what it's worth, a editorial, and this is just a, you know, an example of the kind of response that even for PETA, I think, made them sort of take a moment, rethink things. Just going to read a little bit of that. Headline, PETA's crude analogies. We have all heard of comparing apples to oranges, but is the burning alive of black men equal to the burning of a chicken? People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals would have you think so. Known for its provocative ads, PETA has created yet another firestorm, this time exhibiting scenes of some historic atrocities and comparing them to images of animal abuse. Gives the link to that, PETA.org/animal-liberation/display.afp. The online exhibit, which accuses a, quote, human-dominated society, end quote, of tyranny over, quote, powerless animals, end quote, uses imagery and words to compare lynchings of blacks in the South to the hangings of cows, the Native American Trail of Tears to modern-day cattle herding, as well as forced labor of children to that of caged chickens and chicken farms. That also employs quotes from Alice Walker, Gandhi, and Martin Luther King, Jr. to reinforce these crude analogies. Goes on from there, but notes that earlier in the year, PETA already had to apologize for making an inappropriate Nazi analogy, a common pitfall, this piece noted, of a demagogue. When I compared the plight of factory animals to the suffering of Jews during the Holocaust, and there's speculating here, another apology may not be far behind that PETA is at least rethinking its campaign, putting on hold a tour of art, of this very art, scheduled for 17 cities. So, thoughts, comments, 949-824-5824, 949-UCI. KUCI. Time now for our mid-news animal quiz. Again, it's a true-false question. If you're the first person to call in with the correct answer at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI, then these are among the prizes that you could choose from. First of all, we can offer some talking animal stuff. We got talking animal t-shirts, talking animal sweatshirt, talking animal coffee mug. We also have CDs, including one from the aforementioned PETA, a cool collection, about 10 or 12 different bands, all doing a song each. Very cool. We've got books from past guests and, in some cases, hopeful future guests, including, as I always delight in pointing out, Shirley MacLaine's book, Out on a Leash. And that's a prize. She's not yet been a guest. She might well be one day. Last time I tried, she was right in the middle of, right in the sort of beginning of making three different films, and it didn't seem like it was in the cards, but we'll perhaps try again. But the reason the book is a prize nonetheless, of course, is that it's co-written by her dog. And the dog, I think, the chapters written by the dog, at least, have been very well reviewed. And what else do we have? We've got t-shirts and other stuff from other animal organizations, including Paws. And we've got the cat toys, dog collars, other stuff. And again, sometime soon I think we'll be getting more stuff. So if you want to suggest some prizes, want to suggest some cool things that we could offer in this way, you can IM us, Talking Animals, AOL Instant Messenger right now, or email us at talkinganimals@AOL.com. All right, so anyway, those prizes not only are available for the first person who calls in with the correct answer to the quiz question now, but later, towards the end of the show, when we play Name an Animal Tune, same deal applies. Okay, so here we go. True, false. Bumblebees use 21 muscles to sting. True or false? 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. And another story that ran not long after last week's show, so not hot off the presses necessarily, but important nonetheless, I think. Animal rights activists will get another chance to try to persuade a federal judge to halt what they consider the senseless slaughter of thousands of pigs on Santa Cruz Island. Recently rebuffed in their attempt to secure a temporary restraining order against the National Park Service in defense of animals and two individual plaintiffs intend to ask Central District Judge Dick Rand Trevisan on September 26th to reconsider the case and grant an injunction against the feral pig eradication program. Government scientists contend that the wild pigs threaten 9 endangered plants and indirectly jeopardize the endangered Santa Cruz Island fox. Santa Barbara businessman Richard M. Feldman, one of the plaintiffs, noted Monday that the standard needed to secure a temporary restraining order was higher than that required for an injunction. The more important distinction he added was that the next court ruling could be appealed. Quote, "We feel we're in an excellent position to appeal any negative decisions the judge might make," Feldman said. "And we anticipated he would come out on the negative side of the argument, but we believe we can win on appeal because the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals is very amenable to arguments about National Environmental Policy Act violations." So we will watch that one and keep you posted. Got a bit of info here from the Orange County People for Animals, our own little local group, and their website is ocpausa.org. So I want to steer you to them for more information. But among the things that they include in their latest newsletter that I thought was important to share, the Captive Primate Safety Act, introduced recently in the Senate, will prohibit interstate and foreign commerce in non-human primates for the pet trade. This federal bill will complement state and local efforts to restrict the possession of these wild animals as pets, as it is not safe or humane to keep these wild animals as pets. Please contact your legislatures, both senators and your representative, today and ask them to co-sponsor the Captive Primary Safety Act, S-1509 and H.R. 1329. For legislator contact information, find out who you should be contacting if you don't already know. Again, visit the OCPA website at ocpausa.org/legislation. And, again, any questions on anything we have or you want to double-check any information, you can either IM us by way of AOL's message, screen name Talking Animals, or just email us at talkinganimals@AOL.com. Also, because this is both important and we have strong ties to Florida, and really, who doesn't love manatees? I'm just going to read a little sort of public service announcement that you may hear another forum or something like it soon on good old KUCI. But for now, I'm just going to read it as is. Playful Whiskers, Spicy Patty Doyle, Shy Deep Dent. Who's your manatee? Adopt one today from Save the Manatee Club and help an endangered species survive. It's just $25, or for $35, you'll also receive a free t-shirt while supplies last. An adoption certificate, photo and biography, membership handbook, and newsletter subscription come with every adoption. Choose your manatee by calling 1-800-432-JOIN or visit SaveTheManatee.org. And that is really cool. I mean, we've done that. We've adopted a manatee. It's a great gift for kids, too. And it really helps these really cool, nice creatures. So, again, it's SaveTheManatee.org is your best bet for finding out more about just the whole organization and, again, how to adopt a manatee of your very own, in a sort, in a way, in a manner of speaking. Locally here, we've got time maybe for one or two more quick things before we step into the comedy corner and then welcome our guest, Roland Smith. I want to mention that right here in our backyard, the Rohr Foundation, of course, that's headed by Tippi Hedren, who's been a guest on the show in the past, and the Artisan Gallery present A Journey Through Africa, a Shambhala Safari. This is an exhibition of the African wildlife photography by North Tustin resident Joe DeStefano. The photographs in this exhibition, along with Shambhala boutique items, will be available for purchase. All proceeds will benefit the Shambhala Preserve. And again, that's the specific facility that Tippi Hedren founded some years ago and that we discussed with her when she was on the show some time back. And you can check that out on TalkingAnimals.net, by the way. That's that show, and therefore that interview is archived. And we now have a search function, by the way, on there, so you can find specific guests or topics. And so that's at the Artisan Gallery, which is on Newport Avenue. And you can check it out more information by their website, theartisans.com. But it sounds like some really stunning photography. I mean, pretty hard not to when you're shooting African wildlife. And let's see. Couple things that were related to, you know what, though, we'll wait. If we have time, we will come back to these things, but we should probably pop into the Comedy Corner and then get ready to welcome our guest, Joseph Roland Smith here. So, if there are ever any news stories or announcements, events you'd like to bring to our attention, please feel free to email us those items at talkinganimals@AOL.com. We'd also love to encourage you to email us any comments about the show, suggestions of future guests, ideas about animal songs, comedy bits, and any other animal topics that's on your mind. That email again is talkinganimals@AOL.com. Please remind you again that about the Talking Animals website. We hope you'll check out the site, talkinganimals.net. That's .net, and sign up for the email list. We can keep you posted on upcoming guests and other announcements. You'll also find archives and synopses of all the shows, assorted photographs and articles, all kinds of links, other audio pieces, and more. So please stop by and take a look around. The site again is talkinganimals.net. It's time now to step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which, as always, involves animal-oriented comedy. Thought we'd do some vintage stuff today. This is the Smothers Brothers with a piece called Gnus, as you'll later learn that's how they like to pronounce it, on today's Comedy Corner here on KUCI.
Tommy, what? I want to know, have you ever thought about going into any other business?
Yes.
I'm going to escape.
Yes.
What do you want to do?
I want to be a game hunter.
Game hunter?
Yeah. I want to go to the wilds of Australia and over in the east and be a big game hunter, where I want to hunt the most vicious animals in the world.
Like
be,
what? What have you always wanted to hunt? I've always wanted to hunt, if I was a hunter, maybe elephants or tigers.
Elephants and tigers?
Maybe even a lion.
They're vicious.
And maybe even a puma.
There's no crevasses over there.
What do you want to hunt?
I want vicious animals in Australia.
What kind of animals?
Gnus.
Gnu?
They're indigenous to Australia, the wilds of Australia. They're vicious gnus. They attack people.
They do?
Snarling, vicious gnus.
What do they do?
They just eat up pumas. Gnus are tough.
They're very tough. Huh?
Yeah,
how do they hurt you?
Well, if you come on a band of gnus, a group of gnus, you better well walk softly, stranger. If you come on a group of gnus in Australia, you've got to be very careful, because if you
get agonize them,
if you get belligerent with the gnu, they'll attack you and knock you to your knees. You better have a good night with you.
They seem awful vicious.
They're
vicious, uh-huh. Well, why do you want to hunt them then?
I don't know. Nobody ever sees gnus. Very few people ever see gnus.
I don't know what a gnu is, and I don't even think there is such a thing. I'm not going to prolong this foolishness. There's no gnu. It's a product of your imagination.
Oh. Good thing I didn't go over there.
That's the Smothers Brothers in the Comedy Corner today with a piece called Gnus, going with their pronunciation, of course. Taken from their album Curb Your Tongue, Knave, or maybe, in this case, Knave. Comedy Corner, of course, is one of the signature features of Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and you're indeed listening to Talking Animals on KUCI 88.9 FM. Broadcasting from the University of California at Irvine. As many of you know, we also stream live on the internet at KUCI.org. Some of you, no doubt, are listening that very way. And some of you, perhaps, are right through our show website, talkinganimals.net. Before we proceed, I'm obliged to remind you that the opinions and views expressed on Talking Animals are not necessarily those of KUCI, UC Irvine, or the University of California Board of Regents. Earlier in the show, I mentioned that our guest today is Roland Smith, co-author with his wife Marie, of the new children's book, Z is for Zookeeper, a zoo alphabet, a beautifully illustrated work that provides two levels of animal info, one for toddlers in kind of the conventional children's book manner, and the other for much older kids and adults. And when it comes to the world of zoos, Roland knows whereof he writes. He spent more than two decades caring for exotic animals in such capacities as zookeeper, zoo director, assistant zoo director, curator of mammals and birds. He also played a pivotal role in the reintroduction of the red wolf, an animal that had become extinct in the wild, and reintroduced it back into its native range of North Carolina, South Carolina, and Mississippi. So there's much to discuss as we welcome Roland Smith to Talking Animals. Are you there, Roland?
I'm here. How are you?
Good. Thanks for joining us today on Talking Animals.
Oh, good. It's my pleasure.
Great. Well, you know, before we get into discussing more about your work at zoos and with animals and, of course, the book, let's first find out a bit more about your background. I mean, where did you grow up, and to what extent were animals an important part of your formative years?
I grew up actually in Portland, Oregon, and, I didn't really get interested in animals until I started working at the zoo when I was 18. I worked at the Portland Zoo. I got a job there, and didn't know it, but I was really fascinated with animals. I wasn't really around them much when I was young.
So there weren't animals weren't really part of the family life, I take it, growing up?
Not really. I mean, we had a dog and a cat, and you know what I mean? They were around and stuff like that. But I actually sort of stumbled into the zoo business and thought I'd worked there for a year and ended up working with animals for 20 years.
And so I guess it sounds like, since it wasn't a particular passion when you were growing up, or at least relative to the family life there, I mean, was there something that kind of just immediately clicked when you stepped into to working at the zoo that sort of, because it sounds like it just captured you immediately and then, you know, hung on you for 20 years?
Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, seriously, I mean, I started working at the zoo and had an immediate affinity for the animals. And it was just like that.
Yeah.
I went, oh, this is what I should be doing. And found out I was actually pretty good with working with animals. But really, truthfully, you know, everybody says, you must have had animals all the time when you were growing up. And you go, no, actually I didn't.
Wow. Yeah, well, that is unusual, but it sounds like it's one of those things that nonetheless really clicked soon as you stepped into that world. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. 20 years, 7 days a week.
Wow.
4 hours a day.
And what was back when that first step really happened? What was your job? It sounded like you were a young like a teenager.
I was going to Portland State University, majoring in English. Wanted to become an author, a writer, and started working at the Portland Zoo through the university's work study program.
And then I guess once it got its you know, it's talons, I guess, for lack of a better term, into you, the zoo world just kind of hung on. And so I take it you just kind of kept working your way up through, you know, various positions.
Yeah, I was a keeper and became the senior feline keeper there. And then from there I went to the Point Define Zoo in Tacoma, where I was a mammal curator and general curator, and then a species coordinator for the Red Wolf program, and lots of other things.
Yeah. Well, let's take a moment and talk about that, because I think that's really important on a number of levels. So how far into your career were you when the work on behalf of the Red Wolf began?
Ten years.
And what prompted it specifically, Roland?
Well, when I went to the Point Defiance Zoo as the curator of mammals and birds, they actually had most of the Red Wolf up there at an off-site breeding facility. This was early on, before zoos started actually doing a lot of off-site breeding, and I kind of inherited that program, and I kind of had the right skills. I'd worked with gray wolves a great deal as a zookeeper, and was pretty good at handling wolves, and that's one of the reasons they hired me. And very quickly after I got up there, we started to move the wolves around a little bit. One of the things we were worried about is that most of the red wolves were in one place, and if some disease got in there, we might lose them. So we started to set up breeding facilities at zoos all across the United States, and then with the Fish and Wildlife Service, we started to pursue letting some go back into the wild.
And how did that work? Because that sounds like obviously it was successful, but what were the kind of the key steps once you had spread out where they were located? I mean, how did you actually reintroduce them?
Well, the biggest step, of course, is getting permission to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And a reintroduction program is actually more about people than it is about the animals. In our politics, the wolves, you just let them go. I mean, that's as simple as it is, and they mm-hmm. survive or they don't. But
yeah.
getting to that step is a very, very complicated thing. You have
yeah.
to have money to do it. You have to get, you have to go into these little communities and convince them that letting wolves go back into their native habitat is going to work, and you're going to be able to control it and control the wolves.
Mm-hmm.
That takes a lot of work.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Sounds very sort of bureaucratic, little maze that you have to travel
it
through.
Is.
Yeah.
You know, that's the way it works.
Sure.
I mean, I'm not saying that that's a bad thing. That's
no.
the way it always works. That's the way it works with the Great Wolf Reintroduction Program in Yellowstone, which I also worked on. So.
Wow.
I mean, that's the way it. That's the way. That's the way of the world.
Yeah. And yet, it sounds like there was a good. Sounds like a better part of another decade, if I follow the math here. After that, where you continued to work in the zoo world in one capacity or another.
I did, but mostly
yeah.
towards the during that decade. Most of the time, I was in the southeast letting wolves go.
Mm-hmm.
I had positions at the Point Defiance Zoo, but I spent probably half the year in the field.
I see.
Working with the red wolves, even though I had real regular zoo titles. Like, I think I was the assistant director of the Point Defiance Zoo during that time, but I was probably the worst assistant director there was. I wasn't there.
Yeah, well, I guess somehow it worked for them if they gave you that that title.
I had a very good director.
Yeah. Well, so, Roland, with that sort of accomplishment, and obviously it must have been very rewarding to see that the wolves were being successfully reintroduced, how did you finally arrive at the decision to leave behind this phase of your career and take up or really sort of return to more actively writing books?
Actually, I never stopped
yeah.
trying to write books during
right.
that 20 years. And
that's
so what
I
would do is I'd wake up early in the morning, about 4, and I would practice writing for a couple hours. I did it every day for 20 years.
Wow.
And, eventually, I got good enough to get a book published. The first book I got published was a nonfiction book called Sea Otter Rescue. It's about the Valdez oil spill. I was one of the biologists up there.
Mm-hmm.
And cleaning sea otters during that disaster.
Yeah.
That book got published and did pretty well, and I continue to write nonfiction books for kids.
Sure.
Not picture books, but nonfiction books.
Right.
And eventually had a novel come out in 95 called Thunder Cave, and after I had maybe 7 or 8 books out, I thought I could maybe leave my day job. And the truth is, I love the animals. It was great, but letting things go doesn't get much better than that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Letting things go and not getting fired for it doesn't.
Right, matter, yeah. You know? Sounds like you'd probably topped out a bit and was like, what's going to be better than this? Yeah, yeah, for sure.
That's true. You know, I mean, that's really the pinnacle of a zoo person's career is to, you know, help to successfully get something back into the wild. And
yeah.
You know, that seemed like a good time to go when you're kind of on top of things.
Sure. Well, let me let our listeners know, this is Talking Animals and KUCI. We're speaking with Roland Smith, co-author with his wife, Marie, of the new children's book, Z is for Zookeeper, a zoo alphabet, but author of a number of other books, as we're now hearing, and spent a lot of years in the zoo world. So if you'd like to join the conversation, have a question for Roland, please call us at 949-824-5824. So I guess one of the questions, too, that comes to mind, Roland, is that, you know, with having spent so many years in the zoo world and then having written all those kind of books, including some children's books, I guess, you know, it'd be reasonable to wonder why Z is for Zookeeper, didn't come along sooner. That seemed like that would have been one that you would have been sort of itching to write sooner in your...
sooner in the career, yeah.
Yeah.
I think, you know, I thought about it for a long, long time. And,
mm-hmm.
and I've now written like 4 picture books. But for me, my heart really belongs in novels, not to take
mm-hmm.
away from the picture book. That's
sure.
not what I write. And those were kind of long things to write. And everybody kept saying, you should write a picture book. And finally, Marie and I got together, my wife and I.
Mm-hmm.
And she was really the motivation behind writing the book. She says, you know, you have all this experience and we should do this. And we got together with a guy named Henry Cole, who's a tremendous illustrator.
Oh, yeah, it's beautifully done. Yeah.
And he's great. And we put the book together, and it came out.
Yeah. And how did you guys decide on the or maybe this was inherent to the series, but how did you guys decide on the two-tier approach, which I really love, because, I mean, as I mentioned in the introduction, there's, you know, it's sort of that thing for toddlers or thereabouts with just basic kind of, you know, language, rhyming stuff. And then, you know, on each side of that, there's, you know, obviously a whole other level of sophistication in the text that's provided, you know, information on that same topic. And it's really cool.
It is cool. And I'd like to take credit for it, but actually Sleeping Bear Press, which is the publisher,
mm-hmm.
that's the format they use that, in their picture books.
Yeah,
all those picture
I wondered like because I did see, you know, H's for Horace, T's for Teacher, so I figured maybe that was...
It's a great concept, because you're right, it works absolutely on two levels.
Yeah.
Real little kids, like, you know, kids who can't read, you can read the poems and they kind of understand, and then to get into the more detailed stuff on the same page, you have, you know, text.
Sure.
You know, what really happens behind the scenes at the zoo, and... It's a great concept for picture books.
It really is. And as you work your way through the alphabet on this book, I imagine certain words or ideas were sort of a given to be included. But to what extent were there letters that you considered more than one entry for? I mean, I'm sure there must have been some things where you said, oh, gosh, I'd love to cover this, but this is kind of, you know, this M is already spoken for or whatever, you know?
That's the problem. There's only so many letters.
Yeah.
And for me, as an old zookeeper, I wanted to cover things that weren't covered in regular books about zoos. I mean, I wanted to talk about locks.
Yeah, I was just going to say, that's one of the neat things.
All zookeepers worry about, you know what I mean? But nobody really talks about it unless you've actually been a zookeeper yourself.
Yeah, well, maybe you could take a minute, because that's one of the neat things I learned from this book is about the use of red locks, for example. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, red locks, just so your viewers know, before you come to the zoo, usually the exhibits are cleaned, and usually most zookeepers like to clean the exhibits before the public shows up. And
mm-hmm.
so let's take cats, for instance, because that's what I used to work with. What you do is you run the cats into the holding areas, and you lock them inside. And when you're out there cleaning, those holding areas are locked with red locks. And the only person who has a key is the zookeeper who is in the yard cleaning it. The reason
mm-hmm.
we do that is so that someone doesn't come along and make a mistake and open one of those red locks, and suddenly you're
face to face with,
turn around and there's a lion there. That's not a good start to the day.
No. that's cool. And is that
something that a lot of people don't know, because it's not, you know, common knowledge unless you happen to work in the zoo. And we tried to incorporate as much of that as we possibly could, because I think the image of zookeepers is that they sit around and pick up poop all day, but that's a very small part of what a zookeeper actually does.
Yeah, and this thing was really provides a great glimpse into that. And so is the red lock system, is that pretty much, you know, like a standard industry thing? Is that used at all zoos or a variation of it? Or?
Yeah, some variation.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's actually these days gotten a lot more sophisticated. They use a lot of electronic locks,
mm-hmm.
codes
yeah.
and things like that. But when I was doing it, of course, we used padlocks, and we did it a real simple way. We sprayed it red, and there was a big
that's
red
it.
Key, and that's it, and you had that in your pocket.
Right, no one else did.
Out there.
Yeah. And, of course, not surprisingly, given that what we touched on a moment ago, that R was devoted to red wolves, so that's that was cool.
Couldn't help but put that in.
Yeah, no, that's that seems only right, yeah. That's,
well, it's a really good story. It's actually one animal that actually zoos did save from extinction. Had it not been for zoos taking that animal on and leaving it in captivity, it would have actually gone extinct.
Yeah.
I mean, it was extinct in the wild, and zoos kept it going. And so that's one good success story for zoos.
Sure. And that, you know, that kind of reminds me of, as you truly know, there's a, you know, a debate, I guess, raging about elephants in zoos.
Mm-hmm.
With some zoo directors deciding it's really, from their standpoint at least, not a humane way to present elephants in zoos, and so they've closed their exhibits and sent those elephants to sanctuaries. Mm-hmm. Well, I'd just be curious, where do you stand on that? Yeah.
You know, I worked with elephants for years.
Mm-hmm. I figured,
elephants, and I've written actually several books about elephants.
Yeah.
So I definitely have an opinion, and I think they're right.
Yeah.
I think that's one animal that's a pretty... very, very difficult in zoos. The problem is that they need a lot of space. They need special flooring.
Mm-hmm.
They need to be able to, you know, they have huge feed problem. And
sure.
It's a problem. I mean, I worked at Portland Zoo, and that's one of the best breeding elephant places in the world. And we had many, many problems there. So,
yeah.
I think, you know, a cage is a cage, and it doesn't matter how pretty you make it. It needs to be good for the animal. And
right.
elephants are very, very difficult to keep.
Yeah.
On many levels. I mean, we could spend hours talking about that.
Yeah. No, that's the thing. I mean, it's
a real problem.
Yeah, and it's, you know, there may be other animals that people feel that way about, but it does seem that the challenges and therefore why it's probably not really humane to present them there. It's just unique to elephants. I mean, like you say, the space they need, the feet situation. I mean, there's just so many things, just their social network. I mean, you just can't have enough elephants, even if you had the space, which you couldn't get to begin with at a zoo, you know, to keep kind of what would even approximate kind of their normal, you know, sort of social, you know, grouping. And I mean, it just seems like so problematic.
It is problematic.
Yeah.
And of course, it's even more problematic is, and the big question is, what do you do with the elephants that you already have? And that's the situation that zoos are in, and that is people come to see elephants. The elephants are there. There's only so many sanctuaries where you can put these elephants at. So what do you do? And that's another way people need to look at it, too, that there's some huge, no pun intended, but logistics involved
sure.
in taking care of the animals that are already in captivity.
Right.
I mean, and it's not as simple as just saying, oh, we'll just send them all off to sanctuaries. And even the sanctuaries, which are mostly privately run, there's not a lot of good ones out there. There's some good ones, and then there's some
not so good ones.
You wouldn't want to send elephants, too. So
right.
It's a hard problem.
Sure. Sure. Well, that's the thing. That's why I guess people are really, really grappling with it. And like you kind of alluded to a moment ago, on the other hand, I think for certain people, it's like, well, we need an elephant at our zoo, or at least one, because that's what people want to see when they come here.
And that's why they go there, and therefore they need to have the money to support things like the Red Wolf program.
Right.
So I mean, people are not going to go to the zoo to see a little red wolf.
Yeah.
They will go to a zoo to see an elephant or a tiger or a lion.
Sure.
And the fact that they go there and pay money to go see those animals actually supports not big mega animals, but other animals that need help even more than them. So, I mean, it's a complicated problem.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess along those lines, I mean, what impressions or attitudes would you like most readers, whether they are, again, toddlers or you know, people my age or anywhere in between, of Zia's for Zookeeper to come away with upon completing the book? I mean,
I'd like to have them actually have a very good idea of what happens in the zoo. You know, when you go to the zoo, the animals are there and it's sort of a static kind of experience. And I also think there's a lot of misconceptions about what a zookeeper actually does.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
I mean,
zookeepers put up with all the time. You go, you work at the zoo, you shovel poop. Well, I hope they go away knowing that a zookeeper is a very professional job.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually very hard to become a zookeeper these days.
Yeah.
As you probably know. And those people that work in zoos directly with the animals, the zookeepers, are really, really, really important to the animals that are in the zoo.
Yeah.
I know when we were hiring zookeepers when I was a curator, we would hire people who were a little bit uncomfortable with zoos. That's who we thought would take the best care of animals.
Oh, that's interesting. Uncomfortable in what way?
Uncomfortable with animals in captivity. I always kind of looked for that personally because I thought that those people would pay much better attention to the animal and not think, well, this is an ideal circumstance. It's something that I need to make better for this animal because it happens to be here.
Wow, that's really interesting. And I guess just because it seems initially a bit counterintuitive, looks like we have a call here, Roland. I'm going to take one real quick. But I'd be curious to know as we let me just get our listener on the line with us here. Hi, you're on there live on KUCI with Roland Smith.
Hi, I look forward to reading your book. It's so great to see someone with this kind of sensitivity that zookeepers aren't just jailers for animals, you know, that they actually do care. I think there's such a lack of information about what happens at a zoo for little kids and for other people, too.
Oh, yeah. I agree, and I hope that this kind of dispels some of the myths about zookeepers, and I hope that people understand that keeping an animal in captivity is really a very, very difficult thing to do and try to keep the animal healthy and happy and behaviorally in good shape. It's a very difficult thing to do, and the zookeeper is the one who really does most of that.
Cool. Well, thanks, and thanks for. I look forward to reading your book.
Oh, good.
Thanks for the call. So, what I guess I was starting to say there, Roland, is that I mean, how is it those people? Because I think this is really interesting what you just said. How is it those people who were sort of uncomfortable with the idea of animals being in captivity? What prompted them to apply for those jobs so that you could even sort of consider them?
Because they love animals.
Okay. So that,
they love animals,
yeah,
but they also might feel a little bit uncomfortable.
I see. So
the fact that the animals are in captivity, and of course a lot of, not everybody can be a field biologist. There's
yeah,
a few of those positions. Not everybody wants to leave the city. And working at a zoo and taking care of animals is a way of being with animals and fulfilling that desire, but at the same time, you know, maybe helping that animal out that happens to be in captivity.
Wow, cool. Looks like we might have another
that's
quick...
my opinion. I don't know if
right,
zoo people are that way, but we in an interview process, somebody came in and said, I love zoos. Zoos are the greatest things on earth, and we think animals in zoos are great. I would
take a dim
view,
kind of. Yeah. Hi, you're on the air live on KUCI with Roland Smith.
Hi. Yeah, is this Duncan?
Yes.
Oh, hi, Duncan. And this is Roland as well. Hi, my name's John. I actually work with Duncan at KUCI. I'm driving around Orange County and just happened to catch your show, which is awesome. I love the two levels. My question for Roland is, you're kind of in a unique position, you know, doing a children's book and being obviously in the professional realm of zoos and animals. What do you see as being some of the resources that can really help connect kids with the natural environment and the larger sanctuaries that are out there around the world, just getting more connected to animals, understanding them more, and the way that they and their parents can help contribute to the you know, the protection of habitats or protection of hotspots and the, you know, ways to get involved?
Yeah. Well, of course, habitat is everything. It's actually, not to sound callous, but more important than the animal.
Yeah.
I mean, for sure. Bringing it back to zoos, I really don't think that a zoo should keep an animal unless there's a huge educational component associated with that animal, meaning that I think it's wrong to keep an animal in a zoo unless you are teaching the people who are looking at the animal something about that particular animal, the habitat that it needs or whatever, if that makes sense. I'm not sure.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
You know what I mean?
I never thought about it that way.
That's something that some zoos do ignore, and some zoos need to really pick up on. I mean, I mean, the animal's there, but it needs to serve some purpose beyond being in that particular.
So it really acts as a window. It acts as a window into that whole universe surrounding the habitat and the
animals. Exactly, because not everybody can, you know, go on safari in Kenya and look at animals, or you know, go down to the rainforest, or you know, what I mean, that's not going to happen for them.
Yeah, do you know of any zoos nationally that kind of take that posture? I think that's a wonderful idea.
I think all zoos to some degree take that posture, but I think they could take it way beyond that. I mean, I really think that zoos should be purely educational facilities. I mean, that's my opinion.
And along those lines, Roland, we're sort of nearing the end of our time, but I'd be curious to know if there's a zoo or two in the country that you're aware of, you've been to, that you think are doing a particularly good job.
I think Point Defiance does a great job, but I mean, I'm somewhat biased. I was there for a long time.
Sure.
When I started there, it was considered in the top bottom zoos in the United States. When I left, it was in the top 10. It's a very small zoo, which I like.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the cages are small. It means that there's not a lot of animals, but they're all kept pretty well and pretty nice.
And this is in Tacoma?
This is in Tacoma,
okay.
Washington.
Okay, yeah.
I think the Wild Animal Park in San Diego is a nice facility.
Mm-hmm.
Great facility, really.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice.
Yeah.
It's a great facility in California there.
Yeah.
Closer to you guys, I don't know.
Yeah. Are you familiar with the Oakland Zoo?
Yeah.
Are you familiar with the Oakland Zoo?
Oakland Zoo's a nice little zoo.
Yeah.
It's a nice little zoo.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all the zoos are nice. I mean,
sure.
I think that, you know, they all need to strive to justify having their animals, and I think the way that they justify it is by providing education
to
people about the environment and habitat destruction and what's happening with that animal that the people are gawking at.
Right. So that really takes us right back to the question, sort of the area that John was asking about.
Yeah.
So great.
Yeah.
Well,
John,
I'm off. That was a great answer. Thanks so much, you guys.
Oh, thanks for calling.
Okay. Bye.
Thanks. Okay, Roland, well, we are just about near the end of our time. Well, let me just ask kind of, looking back, what were the two or three best things overall about working in a zoo during those years you were doing that?
Two or three best things.
Mm-hmm.
The best thing is the animals.
Yeah.
The second best thing, I think, is to see the dedication of the zookeepers.
Mm-hmm.
It's an amazing thing that they actually do. These people, for the most part, are very, very dedicated to the animals that they are in charge of. That's a very heartening thing to see. I've seen zoos change a lot, And that's heartening, too. You were just bringing up the elephant problem.
Mm-hmm.
Well, 10 years ago, that didn't seem like a problem, even though we knew it was a problem back then.
Yeah.
It's coming out in the public, and people are trying to do something about that, which is a heartening thing, too.
Sure.
And I think we need to talk about these problems in the open. It was oftentimes for years didn't talk about anything in the open. It was all kind of, you know, everything's fine.
Sure.
Now these things are coming out because I think people can understand the challenges that zoos face if they discuss them with them. I don't think any of this stuff needs to be hidden.
Yeah, that's the thing. That whole secret shame thing seems to have been lifted. Yeah.
Yeah,
so.
Leave it behind. Let's just talk about it because
it's all
practical problems and people are smart. They can understand those things.
Sure. Well, I have one more question, but let me just one more time mention that the name of the book is Z is for Zookeeper, a Zoo Alphabet. It's written by Roland Smith and his wife Marie, and illustrated, again, beautiful job of illustrating by a man named Henry Cole. And also there's a website, Roland has a website that has all kinds of cool stuff about some of these very issues we're discussing, other books, chance that he has to come speak to school groups, which I imagine would be really great just based on the book and our conversation here and other stuff. So it's RolandSmith.com. And so lastly, Roland, have you heard about this, actually closes today, but this human exhibit at the London Zoo?
I did see that.
Yeah, I just thought I'd get a quick thought of that as we wrap things up.
I'd go see.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Well, certainly you wouldn't travel to London.
Humans around there.
Right.
I mean, it's kind of an old concept. I remember at the old Portland Zoo, at the Children's Zoo, they used to have this big mirror that you walked up to, and it put you in the... Put you in the cage, your own face and stuff. It's
mm-hmm.
very funny, and so it's not a new concept. But I noticed they were pretty good specimens, though. That was
interesting. Yeah, it sounds like they went through quite a curatorial process.
I think so. I think they picked some good guys. I don't think I would have been picked for it. It would have not been good.
Right. Okay. Well, cool. Well, Roland Smith, thanks again for joining us. So one more time, the book is Z is for Zookeeper, a Zoo Alphabet. And again, check out the website, RolandSmith.com. And thanks so much for spending time with us today on Talking Animals.
Oh, thanks, Duncan. I had a great time. Thanks.
Great. All right. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right. I'm Duncan Strauss. You are listening to Talking Animals on KUCI in Irvine. And it's time to play Name That Animal Tune, pretty much like any other version of Name That Tune you could imagine, except in this game, the tunes are animal-related. So if you can identify this song, call 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI, and you will win a prize if you're the first person. Name That Animal Tune at KUCI.
I saw a werewolf with a Chinese menu in his hand, walking through the streets of Soho in the rain. From the place called Lee Ho Cook, gonna get a big dish of beef chow mein.
Well, can you name that animal, Tim? You can still call it at 949-824-5824. But we have just about reached the end of this week's edition of Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. I want to remind you that the views and opinions expressed in the show are not necessarily... Oh, it looks like we're going to have somebody with a guest. Hi, you're on... Oh, okay. Maybe they'll call back. All right. So I want to remind you that the views and opinions expressed on the show are not necessarily those of KUCI, UCI, or the University of California Board of Regents. I want to thank one more time Roland Smith. Again, the book is Z is for Zookeeper, a Zoo Alphabet, and his website is RolandSmith.com. Next Monday, September 5th, is, of course, Labor Day, so we won't be presenting Talking Animals, but the inimitable T.R. Black will be occupying this slot then, and I highly recommend that you tune in, just as I do his normal show, Thursday morning, from 9 to 10. It's Black Eye on KUCI, and it looks like we have somebody maybe guessing. Hi, you're on the air live on KUCI. Can you name the animal tune?
Werewolf in London.
Absolutely.
All right.
Who's this?
This is Julio.
All right, Julio. Well, we're just about sort of running short on time, but you have any animals that live with you?
What's that?
You have any animals that live with you?
I got three.
Cool. Cats, dogs, others?
Three cats.
Nice. All right, if you can email us at talkinganimals@AOL.com, we'll sort out your prize and how to get it to you just because we're running a little behind here.
Thanks,
all right, congratulations. Thanks for listening and thanks for playing.
Okay, bye.
All right, see ya. So, anyways, T.R. Black will be in this slot next Monday, which, of course, is Labor Day. And either way, he's always on Thursday mornings from 9 to 10 a.m. with Black Eye and KUCI. So I recommend both things. And then we will return on Monday, September 12th, when our guest will be Gloria Groh from the Fauna Foundation, a Canadian organization that provides, among other services, sanctuary for former biomedical research chimpanzees. And when I heard her at a conference recently talking about a rescued chimpanzee and this whole relationship with her. I can't even tell you how emotional I got. It's pretty amazing the work that they do. And many of these chimps have been research chimps for 10, 15, 20 years. And now they're living in a much better environment. So, and there's lots of other things that they do as well that we will discuss. So hope you'll join us for that on Monday, September 12th here on Talking Animals. Meanwhile, other great public affairs shows on KCI include just today alone, the Serena Sharp Show, which of course precedes Talking Animals. Then at 5 p.m. we offer Counterspin, followed at 5:30 by Planetary Radio with Matt Kaplan. And that's just Monday, folks. There's great public affairs programming and talk shows like this each weekday, 8 to 9 and 9 to 10 in the morning, then again from 5 to 6 in the afternoon. I also host a music show called The Dead Air Zone right here on KUCI, Tuesdays from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. It's the wildly eclectic mix of music, covers, and comedy. I hope you'll check it out, and I want to urge you to check out our website, talkinganimals.net. When you get there, please, please, please sign up for our email list. We're going to alert you to guest bookings and other events and announcements. Also, encourage you to email me with any comments, guest suggestions, ideas about show topics, songs, comedy bits, etc. TalkingAnimals@AOL.com. I look forward to hearing from you. Please stay tuned for Jeff Scott and the Blues Disease, his great, great blues show here on KUCI. This has been Talking Animals in 88.9 FM KUCI in Irvine. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. And as always, we're going to close things out with an animal legend. This is The Wonder Stuff with the Size of a Cow on KUCI in Irvine. Catch you next week on Talking Animals.
Thank you.